I'm going to start all over again. This is tape number 565, October the 4th, 1982. It's KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California. From now on, the broadcast will be on live on the air here from 8 to 9 o'clock instead of the 7:30 hour. And you can make note that's an extra half hour after dinner and so forth, evening news, and then you'll catch this from 8 to 9. Ronald Reagan and Nancy are declaring war on dope dealers. I think that's a wonderful idea. I wrote down about six or seven suggestions for them that we may like to send to them. Number one, get the Los Angeles Police Department to release the tape cassettes of Bobby Hall with the links of Ronald Reagan to the mob, to the Republican Party, to top officials in Los Angeles, the dope Hollywood connections. Two, fire Senator Paul Exalt as the campaign manager of Ronald Reagan. He was the governor of Las Vegas, Nevada. He's a senator from Vegas. That is the home of the skimming money, the mob. Get rid of the mob. Three, take away the key to the White House for Frank Sinatra. He insists on going in the front door now. He doesn't like the back entrance and exit, and he has to go in with the dignitaries to be using the front door. Frank Sinatra will take over from Meyer Lansky if he hasn't already. He is the heart of the American syndicate and mob. Get rid of Frank Sinatra. Four, pull out George Bush as vice president. He was CIA director in charge of Task Force 157. He was important in the Nugent Hand Bank when he was the director of the CIA that was involved with assassinations, cocaine, heroin, and narcotics linked to Bobby Vesco, Edwin Wilson, and Frank Turpel. Ronald Reagan could pull out George Bush. That's what Richard Nixon did when he knew he was coming out of office. He pulled the rug out under Agnew to make sure that Agnew didn't become president. Let Reagan get rid of George Bush with his connections and scandalous connections to the CIA, to narcotics dealing, and to specific murders. Next, grant immunity to Edwin Wilson, Theodore Shackley, Thomas Kleins, George Corkula, Frank Turpel, Robert Vesco, if they will tell what they know about who killed John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy, who poisoned Nelson Rockefeller, who drugged Mary Jo Kopechne. Just get those questions out. It'll be the 20th anniversary of the murder of John Kennedy in 2 months, in November, November 22nd. Grant immunity to these men, and they will tell you, starting with their work with the U-2 flight and breaking the peace conference between Khrushchev and Eisenhower and Lee Harvey Oswald, being at the Minsk radio factory and having a finger in the operation with Navy intelligence. Give them immunity because they're all linked to the murders and the drug connections, and that would be very nice. And then release Michael Sindona from the United States. He wants to go back to Italy. If he'll tell where the $45 million from the Franklin National Bank went and his links to the Gambino family, the Genoveses, the organized crime, send him back to Italy. He's called God's banker, and let him stand for five murder charges in Italy. And then release for the Americans the figures of the amount of narcotics that have been brought in this country in the last 3 years from Pakistan, Afghanistan, Southeast Asia, South America, Colombia connections. Give us the figures of how much has come. Those are a few connections if our dear president and his wife want to end the drug problem. There's a brief article, the Dutch prince is depressed. He's going into a hospital in Bern, Switzerland, a mental hospital. That's Prince Claus, the Nazi husband of Queen Beatrix of the Netherlands. His father-in-law was at the funeral of Princess Grace, and we'll be doing a lot on her this evening in a few minutes. And no wonder he's depressed. I should think that the Bernhardt family and the IG Farben family and the Netherland Nazi connection would feel very much in danger with these missing millions and billions floating around. And I'll do more details on that. But October the 2nd, he was put into a mental hospital because of depression. Maybe he wants to not get the same treatment that Roberto Calvi got off the Blackfriars Bridge in London, hanging there, the president of Italy's most important bank. I'm not going to say much about the Tylenol killer. I'm sure that they'll find a loner. He will have been in the service, Korea or South Vietnam. His wife will have left him. He's rejected. His parents were divorced when he was little. He probably made a trip to the Soviet Union. You could do a profile of the loner. We'll see what happens with that story, but I can imagine that the script isn't going to be much different than all the other cover stories, but I don't want to get into the Tylenol right now. Before I get on to Grace Kelly and some of the other important stories, I do want to mention an article that was in the Wall Street Journal because it's apropos of what I do and the way I do my research. It's about a man called John Nesbitt who has a corporation, big corporation. He's not a one-man operation or like I am trying to do or other researchers are trying to do. He has a corporation in Washington and he subscribes to 126 newspapers and he breaks them down into 200 subjects, and he's described as a trend watcher who advises corporations. But the principle is the same, what he does on a big scale and what I and other researchers do. He looks for information in the small print and in the side pages and ignores what he calls the big story. He claims that there's a policy in the major newspapers to put what they call a big story, and it's a news hole. The space is limited for this news hole. And after that, what's left over, the newspapers fill in with bits and pieces of information that get lost in the crisis news. Now, whenever we have a crisis, and I feel many of these crises are built up so that we have approximately, if there's 52 weeks in the year, we have more than 26 crises. They last about a week and a half. We have the El Salvador crisis and the Falklands crisis and the Lebanon. Now we're at the Tylenol, airplane crashes such as Air Florida, the Pan Am, the Polish strikes. And there's a series of crises in which all the papers and all the major magazines cover this as if, oh boy, you know, it's never the real story. The real story is in the small print on the other pages after the big story is filled up. And this Nesbitt in Washington follows this principle. He patterned himself after the OSS during the war. He does what he calls content analysis. He reads local newspapers of all over the country and identifies small stories that do not fit that major story. And he finds that these newspapers are very important. And this is what I try to do, for example, with whether you're studying the Grace Kelly death or major political assassinations or stories that are taking a lot of attention at one time. Something else is going on in the stock market, in the other pages, in Congress, in investigations or grand juries, and they're played down or ignored. So he takes these various newspapers and studies them, and I think it's an interesting article. It was the Wall Street Journal, September 30th, 1982, because I know that when we do get a great big story, on the other pages are other stories even more important. For example, while the Lebanon crisis is going on and Israel's answering one accusation and Begin and Sharon are answering and counting to the news people, two primary witnesses and investigators to the Ambrosiano Bank in Italy were murdered this week. Many of you didn't see it. Maybe it's on the sides pages, but it's an important story that's lost among the news, and yet these witnesses just keep getting off consistently and on the back pages like Section F at the bottom of a page. A researcher, David Emery, called me, did you see the murder of this witness in the San Jose Mercury? Well, it only was in one paper that I noticed when he called attention, and you have to take a lot of papers. That's what this advisor does in Washington. He takes a lot of papers because there's no way to get the story of the news from one paper. And one reason I give the name of the paper and the date on the printed sheet that goes with these tapes, and you can order those from me, get those, and those that subscribe get them automatically, is I give the sources of information because these papers come and go and we're swept in to these major media stories and we lose a thing which was right in front of our eyes at the time. Now, Monterey County, one quick local story before we get on to some of the national, international stories. A local story about our treasurer tax collector, Thomas C. White III. I mentioned him salvaging from the Lombard Bank and the collapse in New York City of several million dollars he recovered from Monterey County from a firm that went bankrupt, $21 million. Well, the second time now, he's in trouble or he wasn't tapped for money that he put into a blind fund at Wells Fargo Bank, but I think local people should get on the case and investigate thoroughly Thomas C. White III, the treasurer tax collector. Now, he put money into a fund for workman's compensation if you're hurt on the job. And the Monterey Herald has a story, County Again Escapes Financial Misfortune. And it was only in the Salinas paper and the Monterey Herald. And it tells how there was a bank deposit made for workman's compensation at the Wells Fargo, which is incidentally a large conduit for espionage, tapping, and I've done many broadcasts, a series on the Wells Fargo Bank. He takes the money from businesses and groups here for workman's compensation, puts it in Wells Fargo, had $20,000 or $30,000 in the Monterey account that could have been taken from Monterey County but wasn't. But it was in the hands of two thieves down in Los Angeles, Larry Fitzpatrick and James Parrish. And they run an insurance firm. They're called Insurance Executives. They've been in business 3 years, and they've just recently left L.A. with $450,000 or more. And they're hurting cities like Santa Monica and other local areas, but Monterey's money wasn't tapped. They got a mailogram, but he didn't tell the Board of Supervisors for a month. But these two guys have dummy fronts. They use the alias of a doctor to draw money off of workman compensations for a non-existing doctor. When a woman in the office caught on, they threatened to kill her. These are the kind of people our workman's compensation money is with. They opened an office in L.A. 3 years ago. It's an operation where Mr. Fitzpatrick is the president and James Parrish is the secretary. They both live at the same house, but one uses a P.O. box and a different telephone number, so nobody knew that they lived together. They have been siphoning off money from this fund and tapping money for their own purposes, and they left a note they were going to Reno, Nevada. One car was at the airport, one at a house, and they disappeared. Now, this operation opens up their own mail. Mr. Fitzpatrick opens his own mail, is responsible for only his lock and key. Nobody else can see what's going on. It's the kind of a one-man operation. There's no secretary and no bookkeeper. Now, the question is, why does our tax expert on the Monterey County go to an operation that doesn't use an open book system where auditors come in and check, where they see where the funds are going? And how can he rely, even though they're allegedly successful for 3 years, they walk off with this money? Now, it seems to me that if people are putting money into this fund and paying into this fund, that our tax collector, if he's caught twice with these shady operations, when is Monterey County going to be hurt the third time? I mean, that's up to you to find out what else he's invested in and what sleazy outfits and banks like Wells Fargo, that an open end that can be used for espionage and all kinds of activities that have been scandalous, linked to Wells Fargo Bank, an open-ended account for those blokes to draw from. So I think that there should be some audit or question on the basis of which he selects a company, and do they have accountants that come in, whether it's H.L. Block or some other accountant that comes in and sees where the money is. Now, a third item, a series of articles that are pertinent to what I call the Cramer versus Cramer story, came out in the news. And this week, 1948, I want to link these together for you. They have to do with, and many of you saw it this week and many of you didn't, the hearings in Washington, D.C. on the Intelligence Committee. They're having hearings for some reason or other. They don't explain what the hearings are on the House Government Operations Committee hearings. And before those hearings came documents from 1947 that Alan Dulles wrote and was identified as Mr. B. He hid his name on the hearings. And this is the report that came out of the news story. Secret report on how the Nazis aided the United States spies. Some of Hitler's top intelligence officials disgusted with Germany's tactics, worked with U.S. intelligence during World War II. The transcript of the secret testimony of Alan Dulles was revealed this last week. Nazis worked with Alan Dulles, and on June 27th, 1947, this is 38 years ago, or 35 years ago, at a hearing by a committee that was deciding on forming the Central Intelligence Agency, And this is the important thing. It goes all the way from 1947 to Grace Kelly. When they were deciding on making the CIA, Alan Dulles, identified as Mr. B and now recognized as Alan Dulles, said that he worked with top Nazis, Hitler's top Nazis, during the war while he was the head of the OSS. And he was asking Congress to form the CIA. He became the first director of the CIA. But the transcripts have previous disclosures. This is what the news account says, of U.S. intelligence being penetrating into Nazi organizations. Now, actually what happened, and this is the news reporter's interpretation of the hearings, American intelligence didn't get into Nazi intelligence. That was when Nazi intelligence infiltrated American intelligence. That was the wedding. 1943 was the marriage of Hitler and Alan Dulles, and Mr. Canaris and Hitler's top agents, Reinhard Gehlen and Mr. Fritz Kramer. That is the day that America was sold down the river. Now, the excuse of the reports of using Nazis was that they gave us information about Peenemünde and the missile bases. Reinhard Gehlen and the top Nazis were making deals with Alan Dulles to bring Wernher von Braun and Walter Dornberger to the United States to use the missile bases. That's where they used slave labor and bones piled on bones, starved. They were fed nothing and worked till they died. They were brought to this country to form our space stations, our space war weapons, and they were involved with the murder of John Kennedy, and I won't even go into Robert and Martin Luther King, but John Kennedy's assassination, they were positively involved with. Now, asked whether it was true that Canaris, Hitler's Admiral William Canaris, was in fact his agent, Alan Dulles said at the time, this is going a little far, but Dulles said he was working with several of the men in Canaris's organization, and he was in fact forming the CIA and testifying in June 27, 1947, about his working with the Nazis during the war. This is a document, a top secret document, that was released this week, and I've been saying this on the air for 12 years. It is the background of my work, because when I scratched Lee Harvey Oswald and the Warren Commission report and the 26 volumes, under every rock was a Nazi, a link of the Reinhard Gehlen, Alan Dulles, links of Nazis to the Dallas-Fort Worth area and in Mexico and New Orleans and everywhere that Lee Harvey Oswald went. John Kennedy mistrusted. He didn't like Alan Dulles after he made him director of the CIA. He fired him, and Alan Dulles was put on the Warren Commission to cover the Nazis in the Kennedy murder. But as back in as early as 1947, he gave testimony when he was forming the CIA and the National Security Council of working during the war, with Hitler's top agents. And what they were doing was making the arrangements to bring them here to form a CIA that became the prototype of Hitler's Gestapo. That's why there's every loophole to bug Americans, to open our mail, to wiretap us, to break up labor organizations, to kill leaders like Martin Luther King. Every so-called loophole, they make it legal, happened, and they were brought to this country. Then they began the Cold War with the Rosenberg trial, the Alger Hiss, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, the Central America, South America, Middle East, Egyptian takeover, so that their agents were located, thanks to Alan Dulles and Reinhard Gehlen, all over the world. Now, the day after this hearing story broke in the Washington Post and the San Francisco Chronicle, there was a fight in Congress. This is September 30th, 1982. One day later, tiff over a document, the Capitol Police were called and grabbed these Alan Dulles documents, the United Press reporter Juan Walte and the Associated Press reporter James Rubin were reading them, and a gentleman from Reuters was reading them when a member of Congress came in, Ira Goldman, and grabbed them because he said they weren't supposed to have them. They were government operations. So the committee then called the Washington police and wanted to set up an arrest because these men were reading these transcripts. Another story Capitol Hill aide worries about World War II transcripts. Why would Ira Goldman worry? As a matter of fact, these are going to be released for the public to see. Why would he worry about that? That was so many years ago, because it never stopped. It's going on today. The same people and the same Nazis that were alive then, the ones that have lived, such as Joseph Mengele's, have worked with our Energy Department, our CIA, Martin Bormann in South America, working with our various agents. That's why they're trying to hide this information. Now, at the United Nations this week, Mr. Andrei Gromyko, the Soviet foreign minister, said that the United States is planning a nuclear war. He said it is the cold-blooded composure of gravediggers that they want this nuclear war. They call attention to that, and it's very evident that this is, in fact, what they do want. But how long ago was this nuclear war planned? A researcher who listens to these broadcasts sent me a copy of the New York Times, October the 10th, 1948. This is 1 year after Allen Dulles got his CIA. This is 1 year after. And it's a story from the New York Times about a peace group in New York City. 100 people from the American Labor Party met in Manhattan and urged Americans to demand peace negotiations with Russia in 1948. They said that the United States is deliberately reconstructing the criminal structure of Nazi Germany in defiance of the will of the American people. See, the American people have no will, because these have been secret. These documents have been locked up for the most part. It's there if you want to find it. But most people don't even have a choice. And these people were saying, 1 year after Allen Dulles admitted that he'd been working with the Nazis from 1943 up to 47 and was ready to form the CIA, and these people got together. One of them was Albert Kahn, who wrote The Great Conspiracy, a very monumental book. The New York Times said there was a small group of men who seized control of American policy. This is by 1948, so that the threat of war looms larger every day. The Labor Party said that instead of breaking up the German trusts, General Clay had decreed that these trusts should remain. And also, these were the IG Farben trusts that are strangling the various countries in this country today. They criticized the communication of the sentence of Ilse Koch, the Beast of Buchenwald, who was sent back later to Germany. And they criticized the clemency for Nazis who massacred American prisoners during the Battle of the Bulge. That was Henry Kissinger and Fritz Kramer and Otto Skorzeny and Allen Dulles and the OSS, Office of Strategic Service, and the SS, which was Himmler's SS, all working together, stalling the Battle of the Bulge, like I've said many times, for 7 months so that the money could get, counterfeit money could get out of Europe and the plates could get out. So at this time period, by these years, they could resurge again and have money for getting that Fourth Reich going. Now, they accused them then of being soft on those people that were responsible for the Bulge. They charged that Germany today had a greater capacity to make war and materials than any other nation except the United States. And instead of trying to continue our wartime unity with the Soviet Russia, we were proposing an alliance with Director Franco of Spain. We allowed Otto Skorzeny in Spain and the Opus Dei and the top Nazis, the Odessa, to organize out of Spain with E. Howard Hunt and Mrs. Hunt and the CIA and Allen Dulles' agents and the Buckleys, Buckley family, and so forth. So that in 1947, Allen Dulles was telling on the hearings of how to form the CIA about his work during the war with those Nazis. And 1 year later, a peace group is saying, hey, we're going to have another war. And 1982, those stories aren't dead, because Gromyko says, like gravediggers, we are planning this war, and indeed we are. And finally, one more point on that subject. Los Angeles Times has a story, demand for Argentine Nuremberg worries the rulers. The people there want a trial for 20,000 people that have been killed since the 70s, that have they've been slain, and they want a Nuremberg trial for the admirals and generals that the United States put into power. And what do you think the answer they said was in this article in Los Angeles Times? They said, we did what we had to do in killing these people. We're no different. We're not Nazis. We're no different than your people in Vietnam, and we shouldn't be tried either. Now, this is a very subtle concept, but I want to get it to you with a sledgehammer approach, maybe, or maybe I'll go soft on it. The point is this. What they were saying was, you had Vietnam, you killed, 45,000 Americans came over, what was the figure in Southeast Asia? So they're saying, you did Vietnam, we have to clean out our country. But who did Vietnam? Fritz Kramer from IG Farben, from Hitler's Germany, from Mussolini in Italy, came to the United States and recruited Kissinger. And when we brought the Nazis to this country, they gave us the Korean War and the Vietnam War. Kramer, the man I keep harping about, was the advisor to Mr. Abrams, to Vernon Walters, to Mr. Sonnenfeld, to Alexander Haig, to Henry Kissinger, the mad bombers, the secret Cambodia bombers, the killers that roam around as executives today. We gave them that power directed by Fritz Kramer. So they come back and say, well, America does it. But America opened the door to Reinhard Galen and James Angleton's connections with Galen and Richard Helms, and the entire Central Intelligence Agency was directed by Fritz Kramer and Mr. Winokur, the historian in the Pentagon, the Nazi who helped write the Warren Report. So now Argentina can say, we have to clean them out. We're no different than you, and we don't need a Nuremberg trial. We killed 20,000 people. That's what we had to do, and you can't try us because you do the same thing. And it is true we do the same thing because the same people are directing the coups down there that allow colonial dignitas and the torturing and the killing in Chile and Argentina, El Salvador, and everywhere else. Just as we send the arms to the Middle East so they can't accuse, we can't accuse them of being naughty if we are funding their operations, right? Okay, now we're going to go to Grace Kelly. I promised that last week. I'll call this part two, but I did want to get into those areas. And this is a complicated story because there's so much, and each week we'll pick up a little and do more, and I have 1.5 hour to continue on the Grace Kelly story. Now, there are four dangerous areas, and Grace tipped all of them. These are dangerous times, and she was in the web of every single one of them. One, I mentioned last week, was the Vatican connection with her close links to the Vatican. The Vatican arranged her marriage. It was an arrangement set up by the Vatican. Her marriage was like Lee and Marina Oswald's. Lee and Marina met at a dance. They didn't see each other again for a couple weeks. They met again at somebody's house. They were engaged. The marriage clicked. Grace Kelly went to Monaco. She met the prince. She came home and played the role of a princess. She didn't see him for about a year and a half. Christmas, the Vatican representative brings Prince Rainier to her home for Christmas dinner. That's December the 25th every year, I believe. And January the 5th at the country club, they announce the engagement. Now, that's all. I don't even know if they saw each other for the 10 days in between night and day or whether he was doing something else. That's it. They were engaged, and her sister refers to it as an arrangement, and that's what it was. All these scandalous stories about the fairy princess, the love affair. If you read between the lines and you don't take all the BS from the APUPI and you start looking at some of the tab sheets, they haven't slept together for 20 years. They're like, he's called a continental man, she refers to him. That means you can screw around with anyone you want. And again, high society, there's stories he would take his son womanizing, you know, and cheating on mom to break him. And that's called the continental man. But that was an arrangement fixed by the Vatican, and the Vatican scandal's going on now, and she's been doing top secret work in the Vatican. And I'll go to these down the line. The Nguyen Han, dangerous times. The headquarters for the arms and the weapons is in Monte Carlo, and she is directly and indirectly linked to that ball of wax, and these are dangerous times. The Arctic Circle, there is a warfare, a battle going on that we'll do some details on, and she was up at the Arctic this summer, and she's tangled, and also Monte Carlo, a citizen of Monte Carlo, had the deciding votes in the VESCO Global Natural Resources conflict, so Monte Carlo even touches that base. And the Hollywood connections, the studios are in deep trouble. Mr. Kerkorian and MGM, Mr. Bagelman with his scandals, 20th Century Fox, where she was on the board of 20th Century Fox. So she's caught in the Hollywood connections, the Arctic Circle, the Nugent and the Vatican, and I'll do some details on those. We'll take a 1-minute break, and I'll get back to the Grace Kelly story.